This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, can you feel it? It is happening right now. We are live. We are live, live, live. It is Tuesday. It is the 4th of November. This is your Red Pill Report for Tuesday, the 4th of November. My name is J.D. Moore. So happy to be joining you guys here again on the radio. This is, of course, the second show we've ever done. And those of you out there who have jumped on the bandwagon and started listening, we cannot tell you how much we appreciate it. This is obviously a new show and a new format, and we're still trying to get all our ducks in a row, but really, really thankful that you guys are joining us out there, and we're happy to be here for you. I hope wherever you are, you're staying warm. I think winter has officially hit because it is chilly where I am, ladies and gentlemen, and windy and pretty much awful. And where I am, obviously, is in beautiful Eldon, Missouri, middle of the middle of the middle of the country. So, kind of a unique perspective from where we are at. And we're going to jump right into the news today. I won't, monologue nearly as much as I did yesterday. I wanted to get some introductions and some thank yous out yesterday. So I did do that. Would like to remind everybody that we are on Truth Frequency Radio, and Truth Frequency Radio is 100% listener supported. And, I would very appreciate it. Everybody that I know would really appreciate it. You guys would go check out the site. There are so many good shows that take place on Truth Frequency, and, cannot thank Chris Geo enough for giving us the opportunity to be here with all of you. I hope all of you are happy and healthy out there. And, let's get into some of the mainstream news that's going on right now. We'll start with the international things. There's been some developments in Russia and in the Ukraine that I think are pretty important. Let me preface this also by saying if you go to the website today at redpillreports.com, really appreciate everybody checking out the site. We had a lot of good visitors yesterday. I got a lot of nice emails yesterday from some people that I haven't seen or spoken to in a long time. Very supportive. So anybody who emailed me yesterday, you guys know who you are, and I really appreciate it. Any kind of feedback is nice. Lets us know that we're not just sitting here talking to our computer screens, ladies and gentlemen. So if you do want to email me, my email is JD, and it's no parentheses or initials or anything like that. It's just a J and a D, no periods, at redpillreports.com. And you can email me. If you want to contact anyone else at the website, you can just go to the website and go to that contact button. But the reason I brought up the website is because on a daily basis, we are going to have all of the news links that I'm going to attempt to cover right there at the top of the page. So if you go to redpillreports.com and go to the top of the page, you will see a link that says show, and it will tell you all about the show that we're going to do today, who the guest is going to be, and things like that, as well as give you an opportunity to look at the links for the news that we feel are the most important things that are going on right now. And again, you know, it's nice for you guys. You can kind of follow along what we're doing, and you can give us feedback directly as soon as we finish talking about an article. We'd love to have that. And it'll also give you some articles that I probably won't get to today. So it's an important thing to know for you guys. So when you go to that link, the first thing you're going to see is a story out of Berko News. And this is news from the Ukraine, and I'm pretty sure that it's very slighted towards the Ukrainian side. But the reason I brought this article up today is because there's actually a map in this article, and it's the most it's the best map of the Ukraine situation that I've seen so far. And the map actually comes from ukraineatwar.blogspot. But I'd recommend everybody go to this article that we're going to talk about And the headline is, of course, Russia and separatists are forces beginning to attack their attacks on one of the checkpoints, checkpoint 31 specifically. So essentially what has happened is there's been a ceasefire that has been declared in eastern Ukraine, you know, near the cities of Donetsk, and there are checkpoints, you know, as people are moving around. And on Sunday, the Ukrainian army forces were forced to give up one of the checkpoints along the Bukmata Highway because there was military pressure, of course, coming from Russia and separatists shelling the checkpoint and essentially violating the ceasefire agreement. Now, of course, as I mentioned before, this information is coming out of a Ukrainian news source, so most likely there may not be a lot of evidence that these people are being supported by Russia, but again, we just don't know. We're going to have Rick Rozoff joining us in the next couple of weeks, and he is one of the most preeminent NATO experts that exists, and so we will be talking to him and hopefully get a little bit more information about what's going on in the Ukraine. But right now it does seem like the ceasefire is not as effective as either side would like it to be, and I'm not sure. You know, the militants seem to be moving forward against these checkpoints and trying to expand their territory. Whether they're being supported by Russia, anybody's guess at this point. Seems like there is a lot of Russia bandwagon jumping right now. So we will see. Take it with a grain of salt. That's what I know about that. On Sunday, Canada launched its first strike against ISIL in Iraq. And this is obviously, they are a major partner in our coalition of the coerced. I mean, coalition of the willing, I think is the title that we're using now. The UK, Canada, and us, which are essentially the same countries. Anyway, but okay, so Canada has conducted its first airstrike mission in Iraq as part of the attacks carried out by the US-led coalition of the coerced against ISIL militants operating in the country. And the Canadian Defense Minister, Rob Nicholson, made the announcement Sunday saying that two Canadian CF-18 jet fighters reportedly dropped laser-guided bombs in the vicinity of Fallujah, west of the capital of Baghdad. The minister also said in his statement that the military will not release any further information about this mission until today. So possibly later today we will have more news for you. And of course, the situation revolves around the anti-ISIL bombing campaign, which is led by Washington, began earlier in August. And in late September, the U.S. and its Arab allies began conducting airstrikes against ISIL populations inside of Syria. Also, unfortunately, without any authorization from Damascus or a UN mandate, which is why Syria is just fomenting at this point. And there's been more news coming out of Syria. We've got news out of Egypt that we need to get to real quick. But that's what's going on in Syria. Canada has decided that they are willing to put their line, you know, their people on the line. So they are dropping bombs. And you heard it here first. There you go. So moving on, I do want to talk about Obama handing over a bunch of weapons again and a bunch of anti-tank missiles to ISIS. He just did it. Now, this report comes out of Front Page Magazine, which is also another really good site. But the report is pretty much as follows. It says, two of the main rebel groups receiving weapons from the United States to fight both the regime and the jihadist groups in Syria have both surrendered to al-Qaeda. Wow, that is huge. So the U.S. and its allies were relying on Harakat Hazem and the Syrian Revolutionary Front to become part of a ground force that would attack the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant inside of Syria. For the last 6 months, the Hazem movement and the SRF, through them, have been receiving heavy weapons from the United States-led coalition, including Grad rockets and anti-tow, anti-tank missiles, things like that. But on Saturday night, Harakat Hazem surrendered military bases and weapons supplied to Jabhat al-Nusra when al-Qaeda affiliates in Syria stormed villages that al-Nusra was controlling. So, and apparently they did it without even firing a shot. So again, you know, this really points to the fact that there just are no moderate rebels. There's just no such thing. And how would you ever control a moderate rebel from becoming, you know, a significant rebel? Because we can't control what's going on around them. We can't control the information that they're getting. We can't control the decisions that they're going to make going forward. So again, there's no such thing as a moderate rebel. They're just jihadists pretending to be whatever we want so they can get weapons, and all that stuff just flows uphill. Which brings me to another story, and this happened just yesterday. This is Egypt, and we're talking about Ansar al-Mahdi's. Now, they are Egypt's most active militant group. They're the largest militia inside of Egypt, also being supported by the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, as of yesterday, in a tweet, now, again, I'm not sure how much international diplomacy carries out through Twitter these days, but it does seem like it is a lot. And so in a tweet on Monday last night, they have sworn their allegiance to ISIS. So now here's another situation where we have got, you know, a group of what we would like to consider to be moderate rebels, supported by the Muslim Brotherhood, being supported by the United States, and 6 months later, now they're swearing allegiance to ISIL and ISIS. So that happened. Again, the Midwest, the Middle East is just fomenting out of control. And who knows what's going to happen next, but we'll certainly do our best to keep an eye on that for you. I have a little interesting news coming out of Thailand right now, in that Thailand's junta leader started to threaten much tighter controls of the media. The media there has been basically doing stories about the former premier, Thaksin, who was there. And Thaksin, he was ousted in 2006 as prime minister. He lives abroad now because of some corruption charges that he's facing. But he's still a really beloved figure in terms of the people who live in northern Bangkok and people who live in northern Thailand. It's mostly the elite power structure that does not like this guy, and they want him out of the news cycle. And the reason that he was in the news cycle is because someone put a picture of him on Facebook cuddling with a panda. And that just can't stand. We just can't handle that. Because we basically what happened is the junta leader has said, well, we can't have anybody thinking good thoughts about this guy. So he has is ostensibly said there will be no more media reporting about Thaksin going forward. So just another indication that in certain parts of the world, the media is controlled by the government. Good thing it couldn't happen here. I don't think we'd ever see a situation here where the six massive corporations that control the media would ever limit our ability to get, you know, correct knowledge or even have a nice thought about somebody that doesn't even live in the country anymore. But there you are. Never happened here. So thank goodness for that. Okay. And that's pretty much everything that's going on internationally right now. I'm kind of bumping through this stuff fairly quickly because I want to try and cover a lot today. So I want to move on to things that are going on in our country, because obviously today is a huge day in the country. Midterm election day is today. Everybody will be going to the polls. And if you do, I would love to get an email from you. Tell me where you're at. What are the initiatives on the ballot that you decided to vote for? If you actually voted for some sort of candidate, I'd be interested in that too. I mean, my opinion on local elections is a lot less jaded than the presidential election that we have coming up, which I think is going to go down as the most disgusting election ever in the history of the planet. I really do. I think it'll be the worst thing that's ever happened in the history of democracy. Just saying. So anyway, getting into some national news and voting-related news, I found this to be kind of startling that the president of the New Mexico University emailed students this last week and encouraged them to vote as often as possible. Now, he goes on in this email asking them to check out some of these bond initiatives that are going through. And he says very clearly in this email to all of the students at the University of New Mexico, please, I'm encouraging you to vote as often as possible. Now, does that seem a little strange? I don't think, and granted, I don't vote very often, but I'm pretty sure you're only supposed to vote once on ballot initiatives. And I would hope that the president of a university would be aware of that. But, you know, it just goes to show voting fraud is prevalent. Oh, and that totally reminds me. I'm glad that I thought about that term, voter fraud. In today's news, guys, there is a featured video. We're going to try and do a featured video every day, just stuff that we couldn't cover on the air if we had to because it's too long or too involved. But there's one in there today. So, again, everybody go to redpillreports.com. And if you go to the show news from today, at the bottom will be a YouTube link to an interesting experience that James O'Keefe had this last week. He, and I'm sure you know who James O'Keefe is, investigative journalist, very high quality investigative journalist. He went to South Carolina and was presented on 20 different occasions voters' ballots. All he had to do was sign them, And he actually talked to the people and said, oh, I left my ID out in the car. I need to run out and get it. And they said, oh, no, you don't need your ID. And, I mean, actually, some of them got a little offended that he would even suggest that he would have to show ID to vote. And this isn't, you know, one of these states that we kind of consider to be ripe with voter fraud. But apparently in South Carolina, it does not take much. So I encourage everyone to go down there and read that video or watch that video. And just think about that as you're going to the polls today. You know, what is this thing controlled? Is this something that we can do that actually is going to make a difference in the world? I have a lot of trouble believing that it will. I have a lot of trouble believing that any of these people are going to allow anything to happen that they don't already have planned. But that's what's going on right now. So again, I encourage everyone to go to the site and check out that video down at the bottom. As another piece of news coming out of Washington State, a lot of you know that I spent a lot of time growing up in Washington State, so I keep an eye on what's going on up there. And there's been some gun initiatives, which is another thing I like to keep an eye on. So this is kind of a double whammy of importance. And the article that we're talking about right now comes out of the DC Gazette, and it is talking about Bill and Melinda Gates funding the gun control initiative in Washington. What's ironic about that, and what's ironic about all of these idiots that think that they're pro-gun control, is A, they're not pro-gun control. I will tell you why here in just about 5 seconds. The best example I can give would be Bill and Melinda Gates having armed guards that live on their property. Because so what they're basically saying is that they're pro-gun for the cops. They're not pro-gun for me. They're pro-gun for the police. You can't really mount, you know, an argument to be anti-gun the other anywhere in the country because you have to arm the police that are going to come disarm me. So that's a no-go in terms of logic. But Bill and Melinda Gates have donated $1 million to this Washington State campaign seeking to expand gun control measures in Washington State, which brings the campaign totals up to about $6 million. And this is not a good thing because this measure that they're trying to get passed is going to require background checks for all gun sales and transfers in Washington, which most people understand that there are FFLs in Washington right now, but Washington is a state where you're allowed to buy and sell private property, which means if you go to a gun show or buy something on the internet, say there's a Facebook site or a Craigslist ad, not that those sites will allow you to do this, but I know that there's places where you can go and exchange firearms. And as long as they're not traveling over state lines, there's never been a problem with that before, but they are looking now to include background checks at the private gun shows and at private sales, which is something I am vehemently against. Now, Washington State, for a lot of you guys that don't know, is a will issue state, which means if you ask for a concealed carry permit, you will get one, provided there's nothing in your past that would prevent you from getting one. It's not a may issue state like some of the other states. And Washington State has probably the best reciprocity rules that there are in America. You can get a CCW there, a CCP in Washington, and take it to just about every other state in the union that allows CCWs. So anybody that starts messing around with gun laws in Washington gets my hair risen up, and I don't like it. So there is a counter initiative, which is Initiative 591, which would prevent the sale from adopting these background checks. Unfortunately, that campaign has only raised about $1 million so far. So it's going to be a difficult fight in Washington. We'll find out more soon, I imagine. It was a fantastic short little snippet on Zero Hedge today about national news. And we were talking yesterday with Aaron and Melissa about Ebola and whether or not there might be some sort of agenda to keep it out of the news cycle. And so this snippet came across my desk on the Newswire late last night, and I thought it bared repeating because it actually says very specifically why Ebola is not in the news anymore. And this comes down to David Kroll, who is an adjunct professor at Duke University, and he said the Associated Press and other press outlets have agreed not to report on suspected cases of Ebola in the United States until a positive viral RNA test has been completed, which means the mainstream media, those giant six corporations that we just spoke about a little while ago, have completely decided to keep suspected Ebola cases out of the news because there's no way to really check for them quickly enough without preventing panic. So that's why it's out of the news. The Ebola czar is doing exactly what he is supposed to do. I would suspect that after today, when the elections are over, that news cycle chain will be broken, and we will start seeing Ebola coming back into the news in ways that we're not expecting right now. Hopefully that's not the case, but we shall see. So, moving on back to the Midwest, this guy, I swear, you just wonder about people sometimes. This man in Illinois was busted trying to join ISIS at Chicago International Airport. Okay, so this gentleman, his name is Mohammed Khan. He was apprehended at O'Hare in Chicago while trying to go and join the Islamic State in Syria or Iraq. But the way that he got caught is just insane. But, okay, so first and foremost, there are people out there who are going to try and leave the United States and go fight for ISIS. And what's interesting about this particular situation of this guy in Illinois is that he doesn't fit the standard FBI terrorist mold of, they picked out a guy, they kind of coerced him, they nurtured this event along. This man wrote a 3-page letter to his parents and left it there, asking them not to call the authorities, telling them that he was going to join the ISIS, the ISIS regime, saying that he did not want his children to be raised amongst Western, Western infidels, and even invited them to come join him. So, that's how he got caught. You know, his parents read that letter, obviously called the FBI. They caught him at the airport before he could board the plane to leave the country and interrogated him for a number of hours. And now he is going to go to jail, it looks like. He's charged with one count right now of attempting to provide material support or resources to a terrorist group. And that one charge carries up to 15 years in prison if he is convicted. So, just a tip, and I'm not here to promote people going to join ISIS, but if you do, don't leave a letter for your parents. Text them after you get on the plane. That's probably be better, or at least smarter. Not that I want anybody to go join ISIS, because I'm, whatever. But that's what I know about what's going on in the United States right now. Looks like we are coming up on a break. Nope, my clock is off, so never mind. We're going to keep plugging away on the news here, guys. Hang on one second. And let's see, one more thing that's come out in the news today is a article on Activist Post talking about the new flu shot, which is now made with dog cells. Yay! So they used to make it with chicken cells. They would grow the influenza virus in chicken cells, but now they're using kidney cells from dogs. So everybody hurry up, run out, get your flu shot. 30 million doses headed to the market. I don't know if anybody else has, religious or other, misgivings about that kind of thing, but I certainly do. Certainly not something I'm going to go be getting anytime soon would be the flu shot. Not going to happen. So let's check on the economy right now and figure out what is going on. It looks like currently markets are down just a little bit. We're still well above the 17,000 mark on the Dow. Market's down. It's about 17,295 right now, so about 70 points down right now. And again, we talked about the easing of, or the ending of quantitative easing yesterday, and I seriously thought we'd see more of a result from that, but I think the interest rates are going to stay low, and I think that happy days will be here for a while. I'm obviously, one of our guests that we'll have coming up next week will be Joseph Meyer, and we will be talking to him about that also, just to, get some more information on what's going on there. As far as gold and silver, gold is still hanging out below 1170 right now. It's down another $1.80 today. And silver, is below $16, right at $15.98. And I would be buying silver all day long at that price, guys. But that's just me. And then we've got some oil issues also. Oil has finally fallen below $80 a barrel. This is going to have some pretty far-reaching effects on Russia and on Iran, which I imagine is why oil has been allowed to fall this low. But $76.63 right now will buy you a barrel of oil out in the market, and that is pretty significant in terms of a price drop. I know there are a lot of companies that were really concerned about it falling below that $80 mark, and yet here we are. So you know what I've noticed, though, is that the gas prices haven't really come down that much in town. We're still sitting at about $2.70, which is great, don't get me wrong, but I would certainly like to see it down in, the sub $2 range. I mean, imagine what that would do for the economy, for shipping, for, people's ability to get to and from work and having some extra money to throw around. Man, it would just be such a big deal. So I am a rooter for the continuing tumbling of oil prices, and that's my position on that. I want to draw everybody's attention to, again, if you go to redpillreports.com and find the show link from today, you'll see all of these articles that we're going over. But there's a fantastic article that Tyler Durden did, and Tyler Durden's obviously the guy who runs Zero Hedge. And I would love to go through just one Zero Hedge article with you guys, but I don't have a six-hour radio show to do it, and I can't show you all these really amazing graphs and startling charts and things that they are so good about posting. But I think it might be a break. We're not there yet. Here we go. So anyway, this article on Zero Hedge is about how the petrodollar quietly died and nobody seemed to notice. And this is pretty amazing. There's a Reuters report that they talk about in this. So showing for the first time in almost two decades that energy exporting countries are set to pull their petrodollars out of the world markets this year, citing a study by BNP Paribas. Basically, the petrodollar, longstanding as U.S. leverage to encourage and facilitate U.S. dollar recycling and steady reinvestment in the U.S. denominated assets by the oil exporting nations, and thus it means a steadily increase in the nominal price of all U.S. dollar priced assets. But that has now just driven itself into irrelevance. And there are so many more things going on with this article that I'd like you guys to check it out. But at the end of the day, the most startling information is that this year oil producers will effectively import capital amounting to $7.6 billion. Okay? Importing capital versus exporting capital. They exported $60 billion in 2013 and nearly $250 billion in 2012. So the petrodollar may not technically be dead, but it is essentially in that boat right now, ladies and gentlemen. And that is from Zero Hedge. We're going to wrap it up and take a quick 3-minute break for the station. Thank you guys for sticking with us. This is your Red Pill Report for the 4th of November. We will be right back.
So you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Tyranny with Jim and Jeff Staunch.
Monday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. This is, of course, the Red Pill Report for the fourth day of November. My name is J.D. Moore. Very thankful for you guys sticking with us through the break and keeping on tap and staying here with us. Love having you guys out there listening. So right before the break, we were talking about some economic news. And again, I want to encourage everybody to go read that Zero Hedge article, because there are some charts in there that will just boggle your mind. And it is a super long article, but they always do the best work. Moving on to another issue with Hyundai and Kia, both have agreed to pay a $100 million penalty for selling cars with worse fuel economy than the companies had claimed in what U.S. authorities are terming the largest settlement accord to date. The settlement happened yesterday, and it was between the U.S. EPA and the Department of Justice and California's Air Resource Board, and it revolved around this investigation of the South Korean carmakers back in 2012 overstating their fuel economy ratings. And essentially, what has happened is the testing models that Hyundai and Kia were using were not as accurate as they could have been. There's no indication right now that criminal charges are going to be filed against any member of the board there. The head of Hyundai actually stepped down after all of this kind of came out and his contract had expired. But essentially, Hyundai and Kia both were overstating their mileage by about 1 or 2 miles per gallon. So not really the biggest deal in the world, but it kind of happened, you know, after that 2008 to 2010 time frame when so many consumers were really struggling with gas prices and were trying to buy the most efficient vehicles they could. And so essentially Hyundai and Kia kind of lied. Now, my question, though, on this whole thing is, who's going to get that $100 million? You know, it always interests me when these agencies, you know, are getting settlements and stuff like that, because it's the consumers, you know, that have been violated here. And I wonder what's going to happen in the future in terms of getting some of that back into the hands of the victims. I mean, consumers here. So that has happened, and we'll keep you guys up to date on that as they kind of move forward in that direction with whatever they're going to do there. So Hyundai, Kia, probably be changing their mileage testing models in the near future. Gold is back in the news, has been in the news. We talked about it just a little while ago. Fell Monday to a near record four low against the dollar index. And, you know, the silver has also tumbled, actually touched down to $1,572 an ounce, which is that's as least expensive it's been in more than 5 years. That's just a huge, huge issue. And people are saying mostly that it's the strength of the dollar itself that's knocking gold down below its key support. And, they're saying right now the next key area of support is $1,161.25 an ounce. So does that mean it's going to bounce around $1,161.25 for a while? That's a good possibility. But if we do see, more strength out of the dollar, we could still see yet you know, more drops in the price of gold and the price of silver, which to me, again, you know, that's real money. A lot of you guys who know me, from past experience know that I'm really keyed up on a company called Caripars right now, which is a fantastic organization from Germany, allows you to get small amounts of gold, into your hands when you need them. And, so I'm a big fan of precious metals, and I'm a big fan of hedging my bet against a future collapse of the dollar, because I think it's just a mathematical inevitability at this point. And again, we're going to talk to V, the Gorilla Economist, on Friday, so that should be just about the most amazing economic show, because here's a guy who absolutely understands fundamentally what is wrong with the system. And you know, we're trying to pretend that system fundamentals and market fundamentals still matter, when I don't think that they do, and I believe V is probably on that same page with me. So stay tuned Friday for sure for a really amazing conversation about that. I really look forward to speaking with V later this week. I do also have some Bitcoin news for you guys, and this kind of blends over into the tech world, and I'll jump over into that after this particular story. And again, all of these stories are at redpillreports.com. If you go to the site, you can see right on the main page a link to another page which has all of these articles listed in. But what we're talking about right now is Bitcoin mining supercomputers. There's a company called Bitcoin Brothers who have been completely operating under the radar for about the last 2 years, and they are now launching what they are touting to be the most efficient Bitcoin mining super server ever on the history of the planet. And this is a big deal. And this is I'll tell you why this is a big deal, because essentially, we have this battle being waged right now in the Bitcoin community between the feasibility of mining, which is the act in which Bitcoins are created, and the cost of that. So essentially, there was a while there when Bitcoin was being traded for over $1,000 that the efficiency of the mining organizations was very high, because it was way cost effective to spend all the electricity on cooling and on your servers and things like that in order to produce these Bitcoins. But when the price crashed down to, you know, $300 and $400, it's probably about $350 right now, that really made it very difficult to justify the further mining of Bitcoins. You know, we're kind of at a point where we're reaching parity between supply and demand, which is unusual when you're talking about a cryptocurrency, but that's essentially what's going on. So this German company, Bitcoin Brothers, is introducing a massive super efficient machine, which they say is the acronym is MSEM, as the future computing platform of profitable Bitcoin cloud mining and blockchain transmissions. This supercomputer operates at over 6 petahash. We're talking ridiculously fast, ridiculously powerful. They are built on the first 3D 16 nanometer FinFET ASIC designed by and exclusive to Bitcoin Brothers. So in a quote from Mark Well, who is the COO of Bitcoin Brothers and the founder, one of the co-founders, also an ex-German military cryptologist, so he probably knows his stuff. He said, from the onset, we designed all the hardware and business strategy to scale massively. Low-cost machine manufacturing, deployment, and ongoing operations are all laid out to benefit our customers. And so at one-tenth of the cost of all competing offers out there, they're going to make this a very attractive option for the $2 billion market opportunity that Bitcoin mining presents over the next 2 years. So we shall see if this new mining operation, you know, they're going to be doing cloud mining, is going to offer Bitcoin a kick in the pants. Because if they can effectively change the rate of mining so that it's down to 10% of what it was initially, that margin is huge. We will see so many people jumping on the Bitcoin wagon. And I gotta tell you too, there's a fantastic website out there called fiatleak.com. Fiat, F-I-A-T-L-E-A-K.com. And it shows you in real time the acquisition of Bitcoin across the globe. And if you go there right now, I'm not even gonna go there, because I don't have to go there to tell you what you will see when you go there. You will see China sucking up Bitcoin at a rate that will just make you go, what do they know that we don't know? And now, that's also to say that most of the ginormous mining operations are in China also. So some of that you see on Fiat Leak might be the creation of new coins, but there is no shortage of people in China who are sucking up Bitcoin right now just by the drove. So I think between that, I think between PayPal announcing that they're going to start supporting Bitcoin, I think that's a huge deal. We've obviously got, you know, major corporations like Dish that are going to start accepting Bitcoin now. And now we've got this new super mining supercomputer. So maybe Bitcoin will be back on the rise again. And if you guys are investment centric, this might be something you guys want to keep an eye on. So I'm bringing that to you. And that's what I know about that right now. I wanted to jump now into some tech news today. And I want to preface that by letting you know who our guest is going to be today. We're going to be speaking with Gary Milifieschi. And he is the CEO of Snoopwall.com. He has got easily the most impressive and extensive cybersecurity background of anybody that I've ever spoken to. And he's a tremendously generous guy in terms of his time and what he's willing to share with people. So he's got a lot of things that we're going to talk about today. We're going to be talking about surveillance, some of the surveillance things that are going on around you that you may not be aware of, some of the threats to you and your children that you might not be aware of, and also countervalence, which is essentially what we can do to fight back. He also has some other interesting products and announcements that we're going to talk about later today. So do stay tuned for Gary Milifieschi in the second hour at 11 o'clock. It should be a very interesting discussion, to say the least. In the world of tech news, I'm almost hesitant to say this story, but I'm going to say it anyway because I find it to be hilarious that this is where we are now as a culture. Many of you know that I am not a big fan of the smartphones. Gary will probably back me up on that when he comes onto the show a little later. We had a discussion yesterday about a gentleman who bought a smart TV who will not be using it because it essentially spies on every single aspect of your life and reports straight to the government. So what else out there is going to go smart that we don't know about? Well, how about smart deodorant? Yeah, deodorant, like the stick thing that's in your shower or your bathroom or wherever you keep it. How about a smart stick called the Click Stick? This is, I swear, this is real, guys. I couldn't make this up. We've gotten to a point now where even our deodorant is smart. It has a push-button system. It'll give you the exact amount of antiperspirant that you need with every press. And here's the added benefit. It syncs up with your smartphone. It can follow your personal habits, let you know through a phone alert when you might need to apply some more deodorant. Is this not the most ridiculous thing? They come in five colors, guys. They light up and they're only $21. They're on Kickstarter right now. I just had to bring it up because it's just so patently ridiculous. I don't even know what else to say about it. So if you're interested in smart deodorant, what I find interesting too is that they don't mention anything about what the deodorant actually entails. I'm sure it's probably toxic propylene glycol and horrible things, but the stick lights up and it connects to your phone. And I'm sure it'll give you some kind of audible warning on your phone in mixed company when it'll be, you know, incredibly inappropriate. Warning, you know, you smell bad or something like that. I'll probably have to get one. Maybe I can get them to send me one. I don't know. I just thought that was worth mentioning. So, and another cool gadget, you guys probably don't know this a lot about me, but I have this theory about computers and technology that I think they're going to be here for a while. I don't think we're going to be moving away from technology anytime soon. So any kind of new little gadgets that come out that are either patently ridiculous, like your smart deodorant stick, or this next one that I'm going to talk about, which is actually pretty neat, I'm going to go ahead and bring up because I like them. So this new device is called Don't Move, and it is essentially an electronic paperweight. But what it has, it's essentially very small, about the size of a golf ball, but it's flat, and it says don't touch, okay? But it is Bluetooth, it has a battery in it, and it has an accelerometer in it, and it has a flash drive. So you can put this thing, it's got a sticky side, so if you want to stick it to something like your car, you'll be able to tell if someone is moving your car, your bike, or whatever. Or if you want to use it like a paperweight on your desk, so if you have sensitive things on your desk, it will let you know in an alert when somebody is messing with your stuff. I kind of like that. I think that's kind of neat. Now, of course, it is Bluetooth, so there are range limits, but because it does have a hard drive built in, it can keep track of at least when and where things were messed with on your desk, as it would be. So, again, I think that's pretty neat. They're only about $40. You can go to Indiegogo and check out their site right there. And again, it's called Don't Move. And if you need a link to it, you can obviously go to our site, redpillreports.com, go to the Daily News and check that out. I could use a couple of Wi-Fi, Bluetooth paperweights, let people know not to mess with my stuff. I don't know. I think that's kind of neat. Insight 100 liquid explosive detection system has now moved into a new solution to screening airport liquids, screening liquids at the airport. Pardon me. And the whole goal of this is an attempt to try and keep you from having to throw your water bottle away. Yes, they're going to spend $64,000 on a machine that they can put a bottle of water in and tell you whether or not it is water. So, great. So if you're one of those people that travels through the airport and can't seem to remember that you got to give up your water bottle at the airport line when you go through security, this might be news for you. I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting, though. It's funny to me to see what people's priorities are and what we actually spend our money on around here, because getting through the water, getting through the airport lines with my water bottle is not really a priority that I would pick. As you know, probably could say the same thing about smart deodorant sticks. But here we are. What a wonderful world we are in right now. So Facebook has done some pretty amazing stuff this last week. They have set up a dark web link so that you can access Facebook via Tor. Now that is really interesting. A lot of people might not know what Tor is or the dark web, and I don't have a lot of time to explain it right now, but it is essentially a very highly proxied server on the internet that allows you complete anonymity, excuse me. That's the word I was looking for. But what's interesting about this is that while there's already been the ability to access Facebook via Tor, this new means that Facebook has initiative, this new means that they have set up is going to encrypt all data, which means the Tor users, which are currently sometimes suspected of being hacked accounts, won't have that problem anymore. So users of the site can now use the site without losing the cryptographic protections that Tor offers. And, a lot of us in the States are thinking, why would we, who would want that? Well, China, Iran, North Korea, Cuba, all kinds of countries that have attempted to prevent access to the site. And what's neat about this is this is the first Silicon Valley giant to provide official support for Tor, which is kind of, on the underground still, no pun intended, but is still kind of an underground thing. So it's, obviously using a social media site is difficult to keep your anonymity because you have to log in with your name and things like that. But you will be able to keep them from knowing where you're at, where you're browsing from, what you've been looking at, and things like that. So there is definitely some potential good things involved with being able to access Facebook through Tor. We could have a long discussion about whether or not Facebook is worth accessing at all, but I'm not going to get into that right now. But definitely some interesting tech developments on that side of the fence. And probably, I don't know if this is the scariest story that I've read in a while or just the most indicative that we are at the threshold of things being very, very different going forward into the future. And this is a report coming out of Reuters, and we're talking about MasterCard right now. MasterCard is going to test people's heart rates. Now, what they're looking for is they're trying to determine if your heart rate is individual enough that they can use it to verify payments. Okay, I'm going to say that one more time. They are trying to determine if your heart rate is independent enough from everyone else's that they can use it to verify payments. They've created, and this company is called NIME. The product is called NIME. BioNIM is the name of the company that makes this wearable security device, and what it is going to do is be like a wristlet, and it will authenticate your identity by using your cardiac rhythm. It's going to hopefully eliminate the needs for passwords, PIN codes, and even keys. But does anyone else see a really striked mark of the beast kind of thing happening here? Because I just don't know. I mean, the whole goal of this is so that you can leave your house once the wristband has been activated and attached to your phone and just run out with your wristband. You can buy coffee or groceries just tapping on your wrist. And obviously this is going to be a big push right now because large retailers across North America have been speaking about these data breaches that they've supposedly had. Now, of course, my theory on these data breaches is that it's purely so that they can get these microchipped cards in. You've already seen Target put millions of dollars towards redoing their entire point of sale system so that they can accept those other types of cards. But here, is another move away from, plastic and towards biometric, authentication, which is, it kind of tails onto a story that I missed yesterday and I didn't get an opportunity to talk about it. And I'm going to talk about it with Gary in a little while. So you'll have to go back to yesterday's news if you want to read this one. But, the reason I'm bringing up this biometric stuff right now is, because a circuit court judge in Virginia ruled last week that your fingerprints are not protected by the Fifth Amendment. And what they're talking about is when you get pulled over by a police officer, your phone, if it is if it can be opened with a fingerprint, your fingerprint is like your iris scan. It's biometric. It's not something that you have control over. The police can force your finger onto your phone to open up your phone. Now, the other side of that coin is that if your phone is protected with a passcode or a pattern, now that's considered intellectual property, which is protected by the Fifth Amendment. So if you're getting pulled over by the police, turn your phone off, because most phones require a passcode to get them turned back on. But if you only have the fingerprint biometric, you know, ability to access your phone, the federal government is moving towards making those things not your property. So, which leads us on a slippery slope, you know, coming down the pipe of potentially having all these law enforcement officers with full body cameras on and having them have the ability to, you know, check your iris scan from 10 feet away and do all of these things. And you'll have no privacy about that. You know, you'll have no way to say, well, that's my iris and you don't have the right to scan it. Because that's just not the angle that they're going to be going down with that. So, kind of concerning that MasterCard is going to be looking towards that. We'll keep you guys up to date on what's going to be happening there, because that is frightening to me. Let's move on quickly to a little bit of health news. There are still things going on with Ebola that are important. And one of them is a story that came out of the Deakin Chronicle this last week, talking about the after effects of Ebola. So you think, you know, initially getting Ebola is pretty much worst case scenario, because you're either going to die, 70% chance of being, of dying or losing your family and things like that. But, apparently there are a whole slew of after effects for people who have survived Ebola. The physical after effects, like vision loss, body ache, chest pain, and so there are services now for survivors gradually emerging in these, Sierra Leone, and other Ebola stricken areas, but they're seeing a lot of people with vision problems. And the reason I brought this up is because of that keyword, vision problems. Now, when we were speaking with Melissa and Aaron yesterday, they reminded me that there were a lot of reports coming out of people putting formaldehyde into wells in all of these affected areas of Ebola. And one of the side effects of ingesting formaldehyde is the exact same symptoms of Ebola. And one of the side effects for being around formaldehyde, even in small concentrations, is blindness. It can lead to cloudy vision and blindness. So again, you know, I'm still kind of on the fence about whether or not this is agenda, whether or not this is really happening, or whether or not there have been, precursors to all of these things that are going on. But just to add more fuel to the fire in terms of your concern for Ebola, there is potentially, you know, a problem going forward after the fact, even if you do get better. So just something to bear in mind. Another report coming out of Natural News today, really, really startling stuff here, talking about the assessment of the state American healthcare compiled by the Associated Press. So this is a report that the AP did last week, revealing that the nation is not prepared at all to deal with a large-scale Ebola outbreak. Even if the disease emerged in just really small, isolated clusters, the existing medical infrastructure would quickly crumble. And this is, of course, again, according to the Associated Press. And when we were speaking to Melissa and Aaron yesterday, they both said essentially the same thing, is that even something as small as the people who change the linens in the hospital not coming to work for the day will be enough to shut an entire hospital down. Now, this team of AP reporters evaluated multiple indicators of preparedness at hospitals, including levels of training, available manpower, funding, emergency room conditions, available supplies, and infection control and the protection for healthcare workers. And they also interviewed dozens of top experts in the field to gather educated opinions on the matter. And apparently, the verdict is in, and they say virtually every available resource is currently too limited to handle any type of infectious disease outbreak. And most importantly, and especially Ebola. Besides the likelihood that many healthcare workers would likely refuse to treat Ebola patients based on its track record of the mysterious infections that we've seen, many hospitals, and especially smaller ones, simply don't have the infrastructure in place to deal with a virus like this at all. The worst contenders in this group, according to the AP, were smaller hospitals. Some of these small hospitals, although they are unique, tend to have less funding and fewer staff, and are usually the least trained when it comes to new diseases, and which is obviously the case for this Ebola situation. So I said it yesterday, I'm going to say it again. If you're going to get Ebola, do it now. Right now is the right time to go because the lines at the hospitals are long, or not long, and you could probably get in and you might actually get in and out. Of course, you might go blind afterwards, but hey, there's just that to think about. Another interesting article came out of Mother Earth News. I wanted to share this with you guys because it affected my life and it might affect yours also. And this is the hidden risks of nightlights for children. A lot of people don't think about light while they're sleeping and how much of an effect it can have on your circadian rhythm, on your melatonin creation. But apparently, children are even more profoundly affected. You know, when I go to bed at night, I turn off my computer, I turn off my TVs, I don't have any Wi-Fi running in the house, but I make sure my room is as dark as I can get it. And when I traveled a lot and had to do, you know, days and nights and alternating shifts like that, I would always wear a sleep mask. And I always found that when I don't have light entering my eyes, I sleep better. But this report, the study basically says that in children, melatonin activity was suppressed at light by a nightlight almost as twice as much as it was in adults. So the children are way more affected by these nightlights than we are, and they can even influence the risk of cancer later in life. So I had no idea about that. So this report recommends that if you're going to be doing nighttime feeding, things like that, you want to use a dim red light, which won't affect your eyes nearly as much, but maybe trying to get your children bumped off of having a nightlight in the room might be something that you guys want to consider. There might be a way that you could put on an automatic dimmer switch so that after they fall asleep, it dims out dull so that they could get better sleep. But that was something I had never thought of before, the effect of nightlights on children. So I wanted to bring that all to your attention because I know many of you out there probably have children that sleep with nightlights, or many of you adults probably sleep with nightlights and maybe don't understand the effect that light, you know, your eyelids are not completely shutting everything out. So you're still getting light in there, and that external artificial light can definitely has a major effect on you. Speaking of major effects on you, Kellogg's cereals. We've got a report from Natural Society talking about all of the GMOs, pesticides, and antibiotics in Kellogg's cereals. Now, they start off by saying there's probably a pretty good reason that Kellogg spent over $1 million on media propaganda in California and Washington State to defeat voter ballot initiatives that would have required the labeling of GMO foods, and are now contributing again to the defeat of labeling initiatives in Oregon, contributing another $250,000. But a consumer recently sent a box of Fruit Loops to a lab for genetic testing and found not only the corn and soy used in the cereal are 100% Roundup ready, but so is the sugar. Never mind all the other toxic ingredients. So really what this means is that one box of your Kellogg cereal is, and likely all other cereals containing GMO products, are doing a double dose of glyphosate and BT toxins. Just absolutely crazy. So please, please, please stay away from cereals that are just not good for you. You can go see this on the list and see some of the other products that are labeled on this. But go check out the website. We're going to run to a quick break. We'll be back in 3 minutes with our guest, Gary Milieski. Stay right here. Thank you guys for being here. This is your daily dose of deprogramming.
Haven't you always wanted your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker? To get the word out about the fastest growing news talk outlet in the independent media? Joe Joseph here for TruthFrequencyRadio.com. KTFRN and LibertyStickers.com have teamed up to give you your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker for free. Just go to TruthFrequencyRadio.com/stickers today. And don't forget to visit our friends at LibertyStickers.com, home of the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. Their vast selection and quality of stickers are second to none. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, because silence is consent.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken, but it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. it is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Real people, real radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. My name is J.D. Moore, and this is the Red Pill Report for the 4th of November. Thank you guys so much for joining us and sticking with us through this second hour. I am extremely excited to be joined by Mr. Gary Milewski today. When I said earlier that this gentleman has probably the most extensive and impressive cybersecurity background that I've ever run across, I was not exaggerating. So just listen to this, guys. This will blow your mind. Okay, so Gary's obviously the founder of SnoopWall, which is a fantastic new product that we're going to talk about a little bit today, and the sole inventor of the company's new technology. He's been extremely active in the InfoSec arena, most recently as the editor of Cyber Defense Magazine and the cover story author and a regular contributor to Hackin9 Magazine. He founded NetClarity Incorporated, which is an internal intrusion defense company based on a patented technology that he also invented. Guy's a smart guy, ladies and gentlemen. He's also a member of ISC2.org and CISSP and advisory board of the Center for the Study of Counterterrorism and Cybercrime at Norwich University. He also advises the National Infrastructure Advisory Council, which operates within the United States Department of Homeland Security in the development of the National Strategy to Secure Cyberspace. So this gentleman has got his thumb in so many different pies, and we are absolutely thrilled to have Gary join us on the program today. Gary, thank you so much for joining us on Red Pill Reports today.
JD, thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Oh, man, it's an absolute pleasure. I want to preface this, ladies and gentlemen, by just telling you guys that I had a wonderful conversation with Gary yesterday, and although I had called him to talk about tech news, we ended up talking mostly about New Hampshire and how wonderful New Hampshire is. So we're going to come back around to that towards the end of our interview today, because he's got some things in development that are outside of the scope of tech but are still very interesting to our freedom-loving listeners out there. So I want to make sure we get back to that. But Gary, I think the first question that people are going to want to know is, how did you get involved with cybersecurity? I mean, what a unique niche, what a creative, outlet it must be for you, because I can see all of these things that you've developed. How in the world did you get, you know, invested in this so heavily?
Well, it started when I was a kid. My dad was in the U.S. Navy. And call me a geek. I started out at maybe 11 or 12 saying, boy, it would be great if I could find a way to get a computer at home in the early days when you could barely get a computer in your house. And my dad said, oh, go out and, mow your neighbor's lawns and rake their leaves and cut their grass. And I said, Dad, I'm kind of young. I can barely push the mower. But anyway, I did all that, and I got myself a computer at age 12.
Huh.
And ever since then, I've been in cyberspace.
Right. So, okay, so then how did your education pan out? I mean, you got the computer and you just started, you know, coding yourself, or how did that work that you got to the point where you're at now?
Yeah, I've been coding since 12, and it's funny because one of my relatives has a 7-year-old son who started coding at 6.
So wow.
I guess I started late.
Right.
Funny side story, he was at one of the Apple, summer camps, and everyone around the room said to him, what do you want to be when you grow up? And one kid said, I want to be a baseball player. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. And they looked at him and he said, I'm a computer genius.
I like that. He said, no, I'm going to be a computer genius. He said, I am a computer genius.
he already figured it out. He's one step ahead of me. But, you know, it's funny because back then it started out with like the Timex Sinclair and the TI-99 and all these computers in the early days. Like my mom would say dinner time, and when she would turn off the light to turn off my computer, I didn't have any storage back then. We couldn't even save our programs.
Right. Yeah, it was all floppy disk back then, wasn't it? And no. We mean real floppy disk, like the kind that actually flop when you hold them. I haven't seen one of those in ages.
Yeah, on the Timex Sinclair, when the lights went out and the power went out, there was no storage. There was nothing to save your program.
And then think about where we are today, where everybody in the world has essentially a supercomputer, you know, walking around with them in their pockets. It's remarkable to see how far we've come.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk with you about, because very soon you're going to have a watch that is pretty much, in the past, people would have called it a supercomputer. The Internet of Things, you know, we're all so excited about this amazing, spectacular innovation where our watch is going to have a microphone and a GPS and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and NFC and a webcam, and we're not going to have any total control over it because somebody – whether it's a government agency, a cyber criminal, a cyber spy, somebody is going to want you to be part of their big data network and make you available to the highest bidder.
Yes.
And that's where we're headed.
Well, we're kind of there now where, you know, if you look at Facebook and these other, you know, even Google, you know, we are the product now. It's not the product that they're trying to sell. You know, the service that Google provides is aligning providers of products with the people they think are going to buy them. You know, that's where Google makes all of its money. So for them to, you know, be continually moving down this road of you know, capturing all of this information about you so that they can effectively market to you, it's just disgusting. I mean, it really is.
Well, I wanted to start with what's going on today, working our way from the bedroom to your car, and to share with you how we're all being eavesdropped on in many different ways.
I would love to hear that, and especially if there's some of those ways that people just don't know about now, because how can you protect yourself unless you know, you know?
Exactly. So, first off, anything that has an operating system, whether it's a smartphone, a smart watch, a smart TV, I think anything where they throw the word smart in front of it, is where you want to start to think like MacGyver with the masking tape and say, you know what, maybe it's not so smart to have a webcam in the shower.
Right.
You know, in my bedroom.
Right. I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but did you happen to hear my article earlier about the smart deodorant stick that's coming out now that everybody seriously has to have because it connects to your smartphone and it will make an announcement when you need to apply more deodorant? Because that won't be embarrassing at parties at all. But do we really need smart deodorant sticks now, Gary? That seems a little overkill.
No, wait till you have the robot that says, based on your biometric analysis and your shower habits, we find an 83% probability of future antisocial behavior.
Oh, my gosh. That's too much. But I think you're probably right that we're going towards that. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, so, predictive programming, determining the future. Amazon wants to deliver books to you that they think you're going to want to buy before you make the buy decision.
Wow.
And so you're going to get books, it could be within a year, that arrive, whether it's from a drone or however, arrives at your house, and they're willing to probably eat the cost of a return shipping because they've analyzed so much of your patterns of behavior based on all the data sources they have that they know the next book you're going to buy. So the probability of you returning it is slim. And now they can predict next month's revenues because they're going to sell a lot more books next month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of big data that's happening, where the more, first it starts with corporations, right? The more revenue they can generate, the better. But their way of generating revenue is analyzing. And the way they analyze is to collect. And the way they collect is to install things that eavesdrop on you, whether it's a cookie on your computer or it's software on your smartphone or your watch.
Mm-hmm. Can we pause for just a second? Will you give a decent definition of what a cookie is for people out there who might not know?
Sure. So when internet browsers came along, companies wanted to be able to track folks. And when you go into a search engine, you might notice when you're typing in the browser a couple letters. Let's say you're typing in G-O-V. It'll finish off government. It knows what you want to type. Or
right.
You know, you're looking for McDonald's, M-C, and it'll spell the rest of it. That's because you've already been there before or you've typed it before. And they save that in a little hidden file called a cookie.
Ah, okay.
And the more websites you visit that support cookies, if you don't block cookies, the more information that those websites will have on you. So if you go to Sears and you look at hammers all day, and then you visit Sears tomorrow, they might show you nails because you have a cookie that reminded them that you were buying a hammer.
Wow. It's a brave new world, ladies and gentlemen. It's a brave new world.
It sure is. So we'll start in the bedroom, right?
Let's do that. Yep, okay.
Okay, and I'll tell you a little story about Miss Cassidy Wolf, who was the reigning champion as Miss Teen USA all the way through August of this year, Miss Teen USA 2013.
Okay.
Cassidy Wolf, a teenager from California, was not yet famous, but, you know, she was, I think, Teen California, getting popular enough where some cyber hacker, an online predator, decided he wanted to break in to her computer and her phone, her Facebook account, eavesdrop on her using what's called a remote access Trojan, a rat.
Okay.
And this fellow did it for a year and she never knew. So from her bathroom to her bedroom, from the shower to changing, putting on clothes, talking to friends on the cell phone, hidden without the LED, the light turned on to see that your webcam is enabled.
Mm-hmm.
He took, I believe, over 40,000 pictures of her.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is the kind of thing that can happen to any of us. So on one hand, you've got cyber criminals wanting to eavesdrop on you. You could click the wrong link, and they call it drive-by malware, and you can get a rat installed eavesdropping. So for 1 year, she didn't know. Then she became Miss Teen USA. And along that period, he started emailing her anonymously saying, I've got photos of you, and I want more. And, you know, he started blackmailing her. They call it cyber exploitation or sexploitation because he had inappropriate photos of her.
Wow.
I believe it took the FBI about 6 months to catch him after, she finally realized that this guy was out there.
Right.
So you're looking at a year and a half of being spied on. And it's scary, and it happens to teenagers, and she's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's a privacy champion, and she recommends that people actually do put masking tape and protect their webcam or their microphone or just cover it when they're not using, Skype or something.
Absolutely. I disable my microphone on mine, and I obviously everybody I know has got tape, black electrical tape over their cameras, just because there's just, like you said, there's almost no such thing as a secure network anymore. And, so many things like what you just said are going on all over the place.
Exactly. So is there any place free of surveillance? We start with the bathroom, the bedroom. In Cassidy Wolf's case, no. And in many, many others who aren't aware they're being spied on, we did a threat report on flashlight apps that spy on you. They absolutely can turn on the microphone, not all of them. But it's a little odd that a flashlight needs to geolocate you, read your contact list, collect a lot of data on your phone, and maybe even turn on your microphone and listen in on your conversations.
That's disgusting. Now, why in the world would a flashlight app want that information?
That's the right question to ask. So there are three reasons that any app would spy on you. One is to make you the product of big data and sell your information. And because they're doing it in such a malicious way, we like to call this malware advertising.
Right, I like
malicious,
it.
Malicious, it's malicious and it's malware-based, so
yeah, yeah.
Malvertising. Another is that it can be a government agency in another country that might want to collect data on important people. So if your name on the contact list is important in the phone book or your phone identity and your number, then maybe we'll turn on the mic and listen in on you. And that's a possibility of what we call cyber espionage. The third, and most likely, is cyber crime. Can I watch you do bank account transactions? Can I catch your PIN? Can I hear your voice when you talk to the bank? Can I collect a lot of information when you're dealing with credit cards and online shopping? And as we head towards the shopping season, the holiday season here, that's, you know, for cyber criminals, your smartphone is the best place to survey you, to eavesdrop on you, to steal your identity.
Heck yeah. What about, okay, well, my question, I have two questions then about this flashlight app. Are these negative attributes, are they spelled out in the terms of use? I mean, do you actually accept the fact that you're going to allow these apps to have all of those things? Or is there, you know, certain apps out there that just do these things without you even having an opportunity to accept them or decline them in the beginning?
Yes and no. If you go to Apple's iTunes store or Google's Play and you type in flashlight app, there are 500 in the Apple store. There's more in Google. And if people, which they rarely do, scroll down to look under the privacy access that the app has, it is spelled out, and it'll pop open a window. For example, on the Play Store, it'll pop open a window on, just look at the top two in the Play Store, and you'll see that the window that pops open, this app will geolocate you. This app will read contacts. This app has access to SMS messages. This app can, and it goes on and on and on and on. But nobody ever reads that, and that's usually, we'll call it the small print. Hey, cool flashlight app. It has a strobe light. I think I'll download it. That's
right.
What most people do. Now, the FTC, FTC.gov, sued Brightest Flashlight, the company Golden Shore Technologies that makes the second most popular flashlight app. They have over 100 million downloads. When they sued them, they had about 50 million downloads. The case finally settled, and you're not going to believe the settlement. It's, hey, tell everyone in an upfront way what you're doing to spy on them. So if you install Brightest Flashlight, before you can run it, when you click the icon, it brings up a pop-up box that's about 25 pages of privacy, I'm spying on you, legalese.
And wow.
And at the bottom, you hit either accept or decline. If you decline, the flashlight app closes. And most likely it's not spying on you. And if you accept, it may even choose to run in the background and eavesdrop on you. But you've already accepted that fact by hitting the accept button.
See, and what's crazy about me, or crazy about this whole thing to me, is A, that the children are going to be the most affected by this because, you know, I want to give the benefit of the doubt to the adults out there that are downloading these things, that they actually do read some of that stuff. But, you know, kids especially, you know, you hand a kid a phone who's 12 or 13 or 14, they don't care about people being, you know, it's not even a blip on their radar. But the other side of that is that this, to me, represents the largest lie that's ever told on the internet by everybody, which is, yes, I agree and have read the terms of use. And everybody says that. And no one ever reads those things. So I think this is crazy. That there's so much about this, you know, out there, and people still don't seem to really know. And you did a fantastic interview, with Brett Baer, talking about Snoopwall and about some of the solutions that you've come up with for this exact problem that we're talking about with the flashlight apps. And people gave you a lot of grief about that interview even, didn't they?
JD, it's amazing. I've had people say that was in a green room and it wasn't a real interview. I was in Fox News' headquarters in Washington, D.C. I sat down. I had no real advance notice. Brett didn't say, hey, these are the questions that I'm going to ask. We shook hands. He said hello. And, you know, 3, 2, 1, live, go. And he started an interview. So, you know, yes, it was at Fox News. Yes, it was a real interview. And then I've had people say, well, this is really hilarious. Snoopwall is just dissing the top flashlight apps so that people will buy their free open source flashlight app.
How much is your free open source flashlight app, if I have to ask?
Okay. One, it's free.
Right.
Two, it has no ads in it, so we don't monetize it. We make no money. And three, if anyone understands open source, it means you can use it to make your own flashlight app.
Exactly. Wow.
So it's kind of tough out there. I think that, you know, Red Pill reports, we have to wake up a lot of people. We literally have to shake some people out of their coma of total loss of privacy.
Right. I agree. So, okay, well, let's get into Snoopwall then for a second. Tell us about your organization and what are some of the solutions that you guys have come up with to handle these, and how do those solutions actually work? Why are they a better option than what we're used to now?
Well, we have an absence of controls and regulations right now. And if you look at, you know, the Snowden leak, you have people saying on one side, he's a patriot, and on another side, they're saying, you know, he's a criminal, he's a terrorist. And ultimately, what happened out of his leak was it woke some people up that the NSA just is an example of one of many agencies in many governments, and governments have been spying on people since humanity formed governments.
Yes.
So this is not new information, but people are starting to wake up and say, hey, my privacy has been disregarded in return for technology. So one of, for example, Angry Birds has a backdoor to be able to spy on you through their malvertising network, their ad network, and that the NSA sometimes uses it. And that was one of the leaks. So at Snoopall, we already knew that Angry Birds had a problem, the free version, because it was accessing too many hardware ports. So I'll kind of jump back into who we are and answer your question.
Okay.
But I want to start with, you know, why did I form Snoopwall? I don't want to get into the politics of should governments be spying or not or all that kind of stuff. Because you know what? No matter what I say or do, they're going to spy. Every country has spies, right? What I want to do is talk about countervailance. We have a right as sovereign beings that we are above all these governments, even if the governments don't believe it. We are. In fact, we formed governments as a society, and they are supposed to be servants to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of get tired of the debate, and I just said, why don't I do something, start a company that gives people a chance to reclaim their privacy?
Well, that is awesome.
And so, thank you. And so what we're doing at Snoopwall, and it's really cool because it's a joke about, you know, they're making money with their free apps. I don't know how to answer that because we're not.
That's a tough one, yeah.
We want to help. I mean, if someone can show me, maybe it's we're making it up in volume, right? The more downloads of the free open source flashlight, the more revenue Snoopwall gets.
Right.
We're making up the investment of making something free in volume. But seriously, Snoopwall was formed a couple of years ago, and it's taken us 2 years to actually start to get our code out into the market to do two things. One is to wake up consumers. And you could be a consumer in the U.S., you can be in Canada, you can be anywhere in the world, China, Russia, I don't care. And you can download our free stuff. And consumers can use these free tools to wake themselves up. Hey, I've got a flashlight app spying on me. Hey, Facebook's Messenger uses way too many permissions. These are just facts. I'm not making them up.
Right.
So anyone can grab, you know, our privacy app, a free scanning tool to see what's spying on them on their device or what has too many permissions and, you know, uninstall it or complain to the vendor. Mm-hmm. And we even have a link in privacy app where you just click the link and it opens up your email and prepares a letter in email for you to the vendor who made that app, which says, hey, we noticed you're taking too many permissions. You know, why does a calculator eavesdrop on a bank transaction? Why does a flashlight app geolocate your kids? You know, why does a game turn on the webcam without your knowing it? Things like that. So those tools we developed are free. The flashlight app, and we want to keep making free tools to educate consumers. So the big question is, how can we be in business? Are we a nonprofit? So the goal of Snoopwall is to actually solve the bigger problem in online privacy that we can monetize, we can make money while we're helping consumers, and that's in mobile banking. Mobile banking is the riskiest thing anyone can do today. So credit unions and banks are paying us money to help lock down and secure their mobile apps so that when their customers use their apps, they don't lose their identity or their bank account.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, absolutely makes sense. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So if we do really well making mobile ATM experiences a better experience, then consumers will get a lot more free stuff from us because we'll have the fuel to keep making great privacy tools.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to stop for just a second here. I have a question that came in over Skype when we were talking about the flashlight apps. Are there any other flashlight apps? And I mean, obviously we're here to talk about yours, but are there any others out there that are safe to use?
Now, I've been told there are, and I haven't evaluated them, and the best way to know is, does it need internet access? If it just needs, sometimes it'll say, like in Google Play, it'll say camera, microphone. It really doesn't. Most flashlight apps that just need to turn on the LED, they don't use the camera and the microphone, but there's an API, a function call you make, and to get at it, you have to go through what Google is, camera, microphone. But in reality, if it just turns on the LED, then that's all it needs. If it has no internet access, it's safe. If it has internet access, if the app says needs network permissions, checks Wi-Fi, the list could go on. Once you start connecting to the internet, it's either going to update itself for ads, and many of them, when they do that, they call an analytics API from AdMob or other vendors that really collect a lot of data on you to monitor you. So if it has no network connections, it's safe. If you have to pay for it and you like what it does and it has no internet, go for it. If you want a free one, we made one called Privacy Flashlight that's open source.
Nice. Now, is that criteria, you know, pretty much a good criteria to use with any app that you've got installed to look at all, just to stop what you're doing, take 10 minutes and go and look at your apps and find out what the, you know, what the privileges are that you've agreed to with these apps, you know, anything that's standalone, that seems like that would be a good litmus test for whether or not I want to know. I mean, if I'm going to use my calculator and it's telling me it needs Wi-Fi access, that should raise a red flag, right?
JD, that's a great question. And, you know, John McAfee, his Twitter handle, I think, is Official McAfee, not to confuse it with Intel McAfee, but he actually recently talked about Bible apps that send SMS messages to your friends, and some of them even connect to other countries, like China, and it's a Bible app, and you want to read the Bible. Why is the Bible app doing it? Well, maybe the person who wrote it wants to spread the good word, so they're going to just send messages on your behalf. So if it has no internet access, then yes, it's a book, right?
Right.
But if it has internet access, you've got to start to question what it's doing.
Oh my gosh. So, okay, what are the other things that are out there that people, you know, everybody knows that the NSA is listening to our phone calls, and I'm sure they're listening to our Skype conversation now, but what are the other things out there where, you know, privacy is really under assault that we may not even know about?
Okay, JD, I'm going to work you from the bedroom to the street.
Okay.
We've moved from the bedroom. We talked about Cassidy Wolf and her situation. Now we're in the living room, and we're hanging out with our kids, and one of them hops in front of the Xbox, the new Xbox system for Microsoft camera, which could watch your behavior while you play games, replacing the joystick, right?
Right.
Well, when a young child sits down to play, it has their facial recognition. And the next, let's say the teen sits down, it switches to their avatar and their favorite game automatically. I consider this creepy.
I was just going to say, that's the first word that came to my head, was creepy. Oh, my goodness. Which starts me, leads me towards reminding everybody, too, that Google's mantra is don't be evil. And I think that's indicative of what we're talking about today. But please continue.
Well, Google's mantra is don't be evil, but I find much of their software is creepware.
Right.
Yeah, so, and it's really monetizing you by watching you and collecting data on you, whether it's your facial recognition or otherwise.
Gary, we got to take a quick 3-minute break for the station break. We're going to be back in just a few seconds. We'll continue this conversation.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com.
LifeStraw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. LifeStraw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. LifeStraw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing LifeStraw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube. We're bringing a whole bunch of great new additions to YouTube.
Over the years, we've noticed that a large amount of copyrighted material is uploaded by our users, which is not okay with us. So we've revamped our content identification system to make it so if you even so much as steal a quote or use a line from a movie or TV show, your video will immediately be taken down.
And finally, in order to reduce our bandwidth costs and make videos even cheaper for us to host, we've made it so that videos will always play in the lowest possible quality, 240p. This way, everyone can enjoy fast video speeds and barely average video quality.
YouTube Plus. What are you gonna do about it?
The White Buffalo with John Phillips.
Tuesday through Thursdays. On Truth Frequency Radio.
Bill report for today, the 11th of November. We are very excited to be talking with Mr. Gary Milievsky today of SnoopWall.com. I highly recommend everybody go to SnoopWall.com and check out his products. These are free open source things that you can use that will help you continue to rein back in the privacy that we keep losing to these multinational corporations that just want us to be the product, ostensibly at this point. And as I said, we're super happy that Gary has joined us today. Now, Gary, before the break, you had told me that you were going to work me from the bedroom to the living room and then out to the car, which I have to admit, I've never had another man tell me anything like that before. But we were knee deep in the living room, talking about the Xbox, and I'm here, eyeing suspiciously my roommate's Xbox right now, and that might have to have an office space moment a little later on in the day. But please continue to talk to us about the threats in our own living rooms that we're unaware of right now, if you would, sir.
Sure, and let me define creepware and then tell you what I think might be creepware. So first off, you know, malware is a big word. Viruses, you know, antivirus, viruses, those are the big words.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the range of threats, from Trojans to backdoors to misconfigurations to vulnerabilities, people take advantage of that, and they bypass firewalls, they bypass antivirus, and they install something, or they've built a system that spies on you to begin with, and we call that creepware. So creepware is either a system or software, an operating system or hardware designed by somebody, whether it's a government agency or an online predator or a cyber criminal, that eavesdrops on the victim's device, your tablet, your laptop, your desktop, your smartphone, your Internet of Things device. And that's why I would say the Microsoft facial recognition software that's running on the Xbox One is creepware. It seems very creepy. So I'm putting it in the creepware category.
Okay.
I don't know what they do with those pictures. And that means that the webcam is on. Now, have you ever heard of saying, okay, Google, to your phone?
I actually, back in the day before I realized how creepy Google was, I used that quite a bit at work when I couldn't access my phone because I had gloves on or something like that and I needed to look something up.
So how could you say, okay, Google, and then it starts listening to you? That means it's always listening to the microphone.
Yes.
Keywords, okay, Google.
Well, and there's been so many reports. I mean, Google has come out and said, you know, if you're in your house and your computer is on and they hear a dog barking in the background, they're going to show you ads for dog food, which to me, again, creepy.
Creepy, very creepy. So they filed a patent on that. So I would consider they're malvertising a subset of creepware. Voyeurism is a subset of creepware, information and file stealing, blackmail and sextortion, trolling, computer to denial of service someone to do maybe Bitcoin mining or something when you don't really have permission or to gain financial information on that person. That's creepware.
Right.
And really to turn us all into a product so that we can be sold, right? That's creepware. That's creepware. So I think the behavior in the living room, we started in the bedroom. Now, in the living room, you might have a new smart TV from LG or Samsung or other.
Right.
In July of 2013, two German hackers at the Black Hat conference hacked in remotely into some American family's living room and got into their, because it has Wi-Fi, got into their television set and watched them watching TV.
No way.
Through the webcam.
Ugh.
And that was just a demo of what you can do. So is the ability to gain access remotely to someone else's TV set and watch them in their bedroom or their living room creepy?
It's beyond creepy. And it's what strikes me is that we're in a situation now where the government, you know, ostensibly has been replaced by these huge corporations. So, you know, and even if the government wants this information, it's so easy for them to just approach one of these corporations and, you know, make that happen without actually having to tap into us directly. You know, there's these corporations out there that are more than happy to cultivate all of this information about us and then just hand that over. At least that's the impression that I'm under.
Well, look at the new smart meters as we work our way outside of the living room to the outside of our house.
Hmm.
They allow remote monitoring of your energy and water consumption habits, which can be easily hacked over Wi-Fi.
Right.
And maybe someone could change the numbers and your bill goes up. Or maybe someone just wants to watch your energy consumption behavior for some reason.
Mm-hmm. I did have a friend, and I'm just going to interject this because I've got a friend who does do pen testing, and he's one of the things that he did last year was he acquired a smart meter, and it's interesting because the manufacturer of the smart meter, there's a hole in the back where there's a micro SD card, which is what effectively runs the operating system, and the company that designed the smart meter system said, you know, no one could ever get into that those files because they're, you know, they're not your typical operating system files, and so they're encrypted and hard to find. Well, it turns out they run Linux, which I don't know if you know much about Linux, Gary. I imagine that you do. But Linux is pretty straightforward and pretty easy to use. And my buddy was able to then turn his smart meter into an open Wi-Fi access source for his entire neighborhood, which I thought was kind of cool, I guess, turning the tables back around on them. We've heard countless stories about smart meters and how scary they're going to be and how integrated they're going to be with our appliances. And what do we do to stop all this, Gary? How do we protect our own home? How do we protect our own computers? You know, what do we do? What's the options here that are on the table?
Well, I don't want to say a loaded question, but there's two angles. One is you can just start to reclaim your privacy one step at a time, and there are levels to how far you can go and how far you would want to go. I think it's called New Yorker Magazine or New York Magazine. There's an article about written where I was interviewed by the author about a couple days or maybe a week he was going to try to disappear in San Francisco. In other words, use bitcoins and use disposable credit cards and use a burner phone and see how he could experience a full day or a week without being spied upon and how much work goes into that. There's a lot of work. So one is, you know, don't get too paranoid, but yes, we are being eavesdropped on, and it's by lots of different entities and agents, whether it's a government or it's a corporation, you know, whatever. So that's something that's a fact. So the question is, how far do you go, and where do you really want to protect yourself? I mean, I want to protect my bank account. I want to protect my family. Those are the important areas to me. But if, you know, my face is on a camera on a street corner, it kind of bothers me. They don't have my permission.
Mm-hmm.
What I could do if I really wanted to is go get a, just to have fun, is go get a hat and put three LEDs on the hat and put the band and wear that hat all around, you know, Boston or New York. And the folks who are monitoring those cameras, you know, looking for alleged terrorists are going to see a white glowing face and they're not going to know who I am. Suddenly my phone is going to be eavesdropped pretty quickly and I'm going to be geolocated and, you know, I might have some guys in suits visit me. But the point is, you can do things to disappear. It's just work.
Right. Well, and they're making it harder and harder and harder these days. And I don't know if you listened to the story earlier, but there's a report coming out of Virginia this last week that said, essentially saying that the federal government is going to classify your fingerprints as not protected by the Fifth Amendment. And they're talking about situations where you might be forced by a police officer to use your fingerprint to open up your phone. And I thought that was really interesting that we're starting to see some federal case law now suggesting the fact that your biometric data is not your own and is not something that they can not something that you would be able to protect from, you know, somebody wanting to get your information off your phone. I just thought that was really interesting.
So this might come as a shocker, but I would say that I love the U.S. government, but I love the original form of it,
right. Not
what it's becoming.
Right.
And when you do things that violate the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights, we have a problem. I mean, I swore an oath to defend the Constitution, and I look at folks who have done the same thing and think it's a joke, or they get along in life, you know, making by doing things that are unethical because they have access and power.
Right.
We put them in power. I mean, here we are on an election day, and it's really up to the citizens to decide, are we all going to be lazy and just say, oh, the government's out there to help me, or is it a government that we've created by and for the people that behaves in a way that is constitutional? And that's the real challenge of our time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
to put it mildly.
Even about companies, if our government isn't going to enforce things for itself under its own constraints, it's going to be hard to ask it to do it for companies. Let me step back to a little story that you might not believe. Ford Motor Corporation. Do you know in 1913, Ford created a sociological department, later renamed the Educational Department? Do you know what they did?
No.
They engaged in a moral mission of monitoring workers outside of the workplace to ensure that the workers behaved as upright individuals of good character.
And this was in 1913. That's more than 100 years ago that plan was put into effect.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Now, if you were in the sociological department of Ford Motor Company, you visited workers' homes, gathering information and giving advice on the intimate details of the family budget, the diet, the living arrangements, the recreation, social outlook, and morality.
Oh, that's just astounding. I don't even know what to say. I mean, you got me speechless right now that would have been going on 100 years ago. But you said that as soon as, you know, since government has existed, since corporations have existed, you know, they want to know as much as they can possibly know about us.
Here's one that'll just get people crazy. Workers in this situation, they were put on probation or if they refused to learn English, if they rejected the advice of the investigator, if they gambled or drank excessively.
Wow.
1913 Ford Motor Company. So a lot of people think this is new. I mean, this goes back to the dawn of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only issue now is that they just have virtually unlimited funding and virtually unlimited technology, you know, with which to carry out these agendas.
So spying is, you know, tribal, it's governmental, it's religious, it's corporations, it's jealous spouses. It's been going on forever. And the question you can ask yourself is, what can I do about it? One is to get proactive in who you vote for and you know, work with the ACLU or other organizations to say, hey, I don't like being eavesdropped. Or if you're going to do it on someone, do it with a proper search warrant, things like that.
Right.
And that's one method. And another method is to say, or do both, you could say, hey, I'd like to protect my kids, my family from predators and pedophiles and online cyber criminals and cyber espionage, no matter who's doing it. So I'm going to start to harden my phone and take off apps I don't use and, How many apps do you have, JD? How many apps do you have on your smartphone?
Well, to be honest, I have a smartphone, but it isn't connected to a network because I don't want to pay AT&T $120 a month to keep track of me. So my smartphone has got whatever it came with when I first got it, and I just use it as a mini tablet in case I'm in a Wi-Fi zone and I need to use it. But I have a flip phone, my friend. My cell phone was $10, and it stays in my car. I don't do Wi-Fi in the house, or I don't even have Wi-Fi enabled at home because I don't believe that that's a safe thing. But so I can't tell you exactly how many apps, but whatever it came with stock, I haven't installed any myself.
So you are practicing countervailance to some degree. In other words, on your phone, you're not sitting there with 50 apps like the average user, of which they only use about five. And
right.
how many of those are eavesdropping for all these purposes? We don't know. Audit the phone. You can use our privacy app to audit your phone and see. And you would delete those apps. In your case, you're saying, hey, I don't even want all those apps on my phone, which is very smart. Now, you know, what is countervailance and how can we practice it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's step back. Have you ever seen the real Coca-Cola recipe?
Have I ever? No, of course not. I don't think, has anybody?
Now, one guy claimed he had it and tried to sell it on eBay, and Coca-Cola said that was fraud.
So, okay.
Coca-Cola is probably the number one company in America practicing counter-surveillance. If their secret recipe dropped into the hands of Pepsi or someone else, that would, you know, that might be devastating to their stock, and who knows.
Right.
So they've done so many things to keep a trade secret secret. So you have a right to privacy, and, you know, it is a right, but you're losing that right. So what can you do? Putting masking tape on things might be one thing. Study how Coca-Cola has vaulted that recipe and learn a little bit about that, because you'll learn about protecting against espionage, protecting against surveillance.
So there is a really big, I hadn't even heard the word countervailance until you mentioned it to me yesterday, but there is a major niche, you know, program of countervailance going on, not just on personal level, but on a corporation levels also.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from companies to famous people who wear hats or wigs or sunglasses and costumes to disappear, blend into the crowd, or to the folks who may, I don't know if it's legal or not, I'm not going to get involved, but there is reflective spray on your license plate that makes it blur to cameras and makes it hard to read by LiDAR.
Mm-hmm. You know, I read about that in a pamphlet once, yeah.
there's encrypted and disposable emails. Mm-hmm. The B-2 stealth bomber is a countervailance jet. It's invisible to radar because it scatters the radar signature, so nobody can see it on radar. So if we start to think about how do we counter surveillance, and there's one good book on it, believe it or not, it's called The Official CIA Manual of Trickery and Deception, and that's available online right now. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble or Amazon.
Okay.
The Official CIA Manual of Trickery and Deception described how, you know, in the 50s, the CIA agents in the field in other countries wanted to pass information around, and they didn't want to be intercepted or eavesdropped, and they had to learn and change their behavior. Well, now we're in a world of super surveillance where we may want to learn from the CIA.
Wow. Man, this is just so much interesting news here, Gary. I really like having you on. I got to ask you a question, and I didn't ask you this yesterday, so this might be a little bit out of left field, but I'm really interested in Bitcoin, and there's a lot of conjecture out there about whether or not Bitcoin is anonymous and whether or not Bitcoin is safe to use. And I'm definitely interested in your opinion on that, if you wouldn't mind delving into that for a second.
I love the Bitcoin. The Bitcoin is the world's first countervailance currency.
I had a feeling you would probably say something like that. So what does that mean, though, in terms of going forward with Bitcoin? Is it something that you're going to stay, you know, behind? Is it something that you guys think you might accept at Snoop Wall someday? Or what kind of support do you see for Bitcoin going forward?
Yeah, I mean, we will accept Bitcoin some when we start maybe selling
something
hardened phones to people. But
right.
The Bitcoin, you know, the IRS ruled that the Bitcoin is property. It's not a currency, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what I've done. I mean, I like New Hampshire a lot. There's a lot of people moving to New Hampshire. I've helped people out where they say, hey, I'm, you know, 3 hours north of you in some town I've never been to near the White Mountains, and I really appreciate help on something. You know, can you send me a Bitcoin or a piece of a Bitcoin? And the answer is yes, and I don't have to travel there to get it to them. And they actually can. There's a taxi company in New Hampshire, I think, that accepts Bitcoins. There's restaurants that accept Bitcoins. You can go online to Overstock.com, whose CEO came out to New Hampshire, and we both spoke at a conference out here where he said he loves Bitcoins. And totally invisible. There's a new one called, I think, the Dark Coin. You know, the thing about the Bitcoin is it's getting popular. There's probably billions of dollars worth of it being traded. It's not as big yet as, let's say, the dollar from the Federal Reserve, the notes from the Federal Reserve, the funny money that's printed like mad.
Right.
I think we have 17 or 20 trillion printed like mad. But the Bitcoin is mined like gold is mined.
Mm-hmm.
So the worldwide currency market is, the Forex is trillions traded daily. You know, your Swiss franc traded for my U.S. dollar, mm-hmm. Your Japanese yen or yuan, rather, pronounced yuan, versus mine, et cetera. And it's not yet on that Forex market, so it's not being treated as a currency. But between multiple parties, it is. And originally, certain parties in the U.S. government thought, oh, it's going to be drug dealers and criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's people who want to just catch a ride in a car or go get a cup of coffee. And it's an easy way to move around with money or with a way to exchange one thing for another
mm-hmm.
to obtain a product without the risk of theft. It's very hard to steal a Bitcoin.
Well, and plus the idea that, you know, the government is, I want to say primarily, but is mostly composed of criminals and drug dealers anyway. So, I mean, they were kind of right when they said that, but that's just my own point. I guess the follow-up question I would have then is, do you feel like Bitcoin transactions are safer than the standard bank transactions that people use on their smartphones, or less safe, more safe? What do you think?
Absolutely safer, except who wrote your wallet for you if you're going to have a Bitcoin wallet on your smartphone?
Mm-hmm.
And what other apps are on your phone trying to eavesdrop?
They eavesdrop on
Bitcoin transactions. So that's an area of risk, just like banking. Even if you have encryption with online banking, let's just say, give you an example of how easy it is to hack online banking. Not that I recommend anyone do it because it's illegal.
Right.
But let's say you've got a phone that runs 50 different apps, and one of the apps is your favorite bank app, and you log into your bank account, and you type in your username and your PIN. You're doing it on shared memory on a device that has other apps running in the background. They can spy on you. They could eavesdrop on the things you say through Google or Apple, the cloud, where your voice gets converted to characters.
Mm-hmm.
They could eavesdrop on other things you're doing and steal information so that they could later get into your bank account, even though while you're inside the bank app, you're connecting to the bank server through an encrypted tunnel. The problem is you have an encrypted tunnel on an unsecure device. Or an insecure device.
Right. So talk about the joint shared memory thing really quick and how that actually plays into this.
Well, the big problem on smartphones is that they came loaded. I think you called it earlier, a supercomputer in your pocket. I mean, it's loaded with, I'll call them hardware I/O ports. You've got webcam, Bluetooth, microphone, Wi-Fi, NFC, keyboard, USB connection with the USB protocol running. You've got so many things on that device, hardware I/O, that any app can be downloaded to access them, GPS, etc. So when you download one app and then you download another app, one app could spy on that other app, or it could spy on your behavior while you're in the other app in the foreground. Now, the good news is on an iPhone, there are very few apps that can run in the background. They have to be a clock or a streaming audio player, but in the Windows phone, so it's harder to spy on someone. When an app on those phones is running in the foreground, it could spy on you if it's spyware. Like if you install a flashlight app and while it's in the foreground, it'll collect a lot of data on you.
Right.
But on an Android, which there are a billion people, there are a billion Androids in the market and about 400 million iPhones. So there's more Androids. On the Android, it's a kind of Linux-based operating system where many apps can run at once. One could be in the foreground and many in the background. That's the area of significant risk.
Hmm. So what it sounds like you just said is that the iPhone is significantly safer in terms of app distribution and running than your Android phone. Is that?
For malware, it has to run in the foreground unless the iPhone has been jailbroken.
Ah, okay. Very interesting. So I guess my final question then for you would be, how do you you know, knowing all of these things, how do you anticipate or how do you live your life differently than other people? What are the things that you do, you know, to protect yourself that might be even above and beyond what your recommendations would be for regular people? Or do you do those things?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm cautious, being aware of my surroundings, and when I'm having private conversations, I make sure they're private. You know, some people take the battery out of their phone to make sure that they're having a private conversation in a room with another person.
See, and I've heard that some of these phones have additional batteries in them, so that's not even a possibility. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, I do know that the phones have what's called a second operating system. All phones have two operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
One is the one to present a user interface to all of us so that we can play games and turn on flashlights and things and browse the internet and do our email and chat. The other operating system is to manage the connection to the cellular towers.
Okay.
Now, if that had its own battery, that would be interesting, but I haven't seen that. But it is a secondary operating system. What I've heard is that while your battery's in, but the phone is off, that secondary OS could still be running in a low power mode.
Oh. Probably more significant for people who have got newer phones rather than your older smartphones, but still something to be aware of. I want to switch gears, Gary, because yesterday when I talked to you on the phone, we had a really nice discussion about New Hampshire, and I know you've got something cooking in the New Hampshire arena. Do you want to talk to us about that project that you're involved in?
Sure. I've been in the state for many years. I love New Hampshire. We've got, you know, from not a big area of the East Coast Ocean, but we've got a beach that was named one of the best in America, Hampton Beach.
Mm-hmm.
I think the state put $1 million into cleaning it up and making it beautiful. Ocean and beach-wise, it was always nice, but some of the buildings were older. So it's a nice boardwalk. All the way up to the White Mountains, Mount Washington, we have one of the tallest mountains on the East Coast. And, you know, to Lake Winnipesaukee, one of the biggest lakes. It's a beautiful state. It really is. We don't have an overwhelming population. And so a group called the Free State Project decided of all the states in America, they wanted to come in my direction and start moving people who cared about the Constitution, who cared about freedom and privacy and liberty. And that's called the Free State Project.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while I haven't been involved in the Free State Project, I've been invited to speak at their conferences and things about privacy and security and countervailance. And I got to meet a great group of people who needed some help to put together a film called 101 Reasons Film. So I'm the executive producer on that film. Working with that team, we'll have the film out in a matter of days. It's 101reasonsfilm.com that really showcases, I'll call it the grandeur of New Hampshire in all aspects, including the fact that there's no state income tax, there's no sales tax, and if the Free State Project has their way, there'll be no taxes whatsoever in the state at some point in time.
Right. Well, and you mentioned to me also that the cost of land out there is exceptionally reasonable.
The further north you go or into areas that are less populated,
mm-hmm.
the more acreage you can get at a very, very low cost. You know, from $30,000 to buy a plot of land with many acres is almost unheard of in certain states in America.
Right. Well, I told you yesterday, you know, I've got a lot of love in my heart for New Hampshire. It's obviously the live free or die state, which coincides to a lot of our personal beliefs here at Red Pill and also at Truth Frequency. So I've been toying with the idea of moving there, and I've been following the developments in Keene for a long time. But you definitely piqued my interest yesterday about looking at New Hampshire a lot more seriously, and I look forward to that film coming out. What was that website again, Gary?
It's 101 Reasons Film, you know, 101reasonsfilm.com.
Okay, and then your website is obviously snoopwall.com. Can people get in touch with you through that website, sir?
Sure, they could email me, CEO@snoopwall.com. I'm available as often as I can for anybody interested in our company.
Fantastic. Gary, this has been a wonderful, wonderful interview. I really appreciate you coming on today and look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thanks, and John, at snoopwall.com/free, we have a whole countervailance course for free.
Oh, how awesome is that? Countervailance. Yes. There you go.
You make a great team. It's been that way since the day you met. But your erectile dysfunction? It could be a question of blood flow. Sometimes when a politician has been in D.C. too long, it goes to his head, and he just can't seem to get the job done. Used on a daily basis, Winter Egg in Congress will help you every time the moment is right to have your voice heard at the federal level. When using WinterEgg, it's important to note that the borders will be secured, Second Amendment rights protected, Obamacare and Planned Parenthood will be defunded, and common sense will be used in solving the nation's problems. Other signs of erectile dysfunction may include extreme skin discoloration, the inability to punch oneself out of a wet paper bag,
or maintain a spine in the face of liberal opposition, amore di gramine verde, smoking,
and golf. If you have a boner lasting longer than 23 years, seek immediate medical attention. WinterEgg. Because Boehner shouldn't count as chickens before they hatch.
It's Boehner.
I'm J.D. WinterEgg, and I approve this.